be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
So it's a great pleasure to be here at Syracuse Law School. We are the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. I'm Judge Toth. To my right is Judge Falvey, and to my left is Judge Jaquith. And we are here this afternoon to consider arguments in the matter of Carmen L. Encarnacion versus Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 21-1411. Will counsel, beginning with the appellant's counsel, please enter your appearance for the record?
This is Julia Giesecking and Samantha Hates for Carmen L. Encarnacion.
Thank you. And would appellant's counsel like to reserve time for rebuttal?
10 minutes,
please. Okay, please note that, 10 minutes. And counsel for the appellee?
Amanda Radke, and along with me is Drew Silo for the secretary.
Welcome. Counsel? You can begin.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Prior to addressing jurisdiction in this case, it's imperative to note that there's two claimants at issue here. First are the veterans' appeals stemming from the veterans' claims that have been in pending status since his wife filed for substitution in 2011, but there has never been a decision by the secretary compliant with Section 3.1010E. The other claimant here is the appellant, Ms. Encarnacion, whose VA Form 21534 led to the adjudication of her claims for accrued benefits and DIC. So there are two separate claim streams.
So where are the other claims in the claim stream? Just out of curiosity.
They're all the same claims, but some of the claims are under accrued benefits 5121 little a versus 5121 big A, which would be the veterans' claims that she had substituted for or tried to substitute for. Though the board purported to issue its own finding as to the issue of substitution, is prohibited in doing so under Section 21302 and at the Federal Circuit's holding in NOVA.
I mean, are you really arguing that substitution wasn't proper here? Because, I mean, that would
Correct.
Seem to be – I mean, how is that advantageous to your client?
Well, I think that it actually gives this court jurisdiction to hear the claim, even though the 2020 decision didn't necessarily have to do with the claims at issue and had to do with the validity of an NOD, because...
Sorry to interrupt you. How is that so? I mean, without a valid substitute, we would have to dismiss the case.
Well, in 2016, the board referred the issue of substitution in two separate decisions. They made a decision for Ms. Encarnacion with her accrued benefits and her DIC benefits in one decision. On the same day, they issued a decision in the veterans claims where they referred the issue of substitution for VA to make the finding in the first instance. That never occurred. So those are still pending, but part of, you know, decisions that the board could have made a decision on. In this case, the jurisdictional conferring NOD is his 2010 NOD that the veteran filed before he passed away. So even though you may have the issue of whether a 2018 NOD was valid or whether the substitution ever happened so the court doesn't have jurisdiction, I don't think that's necessarily an issue because it was reasonably raised by the record. The board acknowledged that it was a problem in 2016, but then continued to try to adjudicate it regardless.
Maybe we can kind of approach the question from a sort of different angle, which is what's the remedy that you'd like from this court?
The remedy would be to remand to the board to direct the VA to comply with the referral to issue the substitution decision and then adjudicate the substituted claims, the veterans' claims.
What is wrong with the board's implicit determination that VA implicitly determined that Ms. Encarnacion was a proper substitute?
Well, I mean, it's prohibited by the regulation, but also the secretary affirmatively argued in NOVA that The board absolutely cannot make that decision in the first instance, because it doesn't create an appealable decision that a person who is denied substitution could then appeal to the board. And they also had some prudential concerns, such as, like, the board is not the place for fact-finding. I understand that it's slightly nitpicky, because we know she's the surviving spouse in this instance. But the procedural history of this case, there are so many instances where it's not clear whether it was being decided on the basis of accrued benefits or substitution. In substitution, she didn't even get notice of substitution of the rights to as a substitute until 2017. And that letter didn't even contain the right to a hearing, which the veteran had requested before he died.
I mean, I'm trying to sort of tease out the thought process and sort of see what the end game is here. Is it that, I mean, is the plan, if you get in front of the RO again, that you would submit some type of new evidence and there would be some type of additional development on the claim streams? Because, I mean, I'm struggling to see how re-adjudicating an issue that I think has been found favorably for you would assist sort of your Encarnacion's overall claim.
Well, some were favorable and some were not. I think a spouse is always going to be in a good position to do a hearing to give testimony on the functional aspects of how the disabilities affect the spouse. Whether she's going to affirmatively do that, I can't answer, but she was never given the opportunity either. And these started in 2011 and were adjudicated underneath at the RO as accrued benefits claims with the record closed at the time of death and no right to a hearing, no right to new evidence submission, no right to anything. She didn't even get a notice of those rights until 2017. So, I mean, our position is basically that, you know, since 2016, these things properly split. The board made the right decision, and that's why they issued two decisions. And anything that's come up since then is just on the basis of accrued benefits, even if they're trying to say it's substitution. VA's rating decisions, including the ones implementing, the board's decision that's whether the NOD is valid, that issue here, in June of 2018, said in the rating decision that it was based on the record of the time of death, even though this was supposedly a substitution decision. So the problem that we see is that it is extremely unclear to any appellant, particularly an elderly, claimant who's a spouse, surviving spouse, how is she supposed to understand what her rights are in a particular circumstance? Because if it's accrued benefits, it's a very different right. If it's substitution, then she has, a whole lot more leeway.
Would you, although the issue wouldn't be before us, I don't believe, but would you be contending that the favorable findings, the VA would be bound by them then? Or would you be starting from scratch when we...
I think I've actually gone back and forth about that one a lot. I think that it would be very hard to find differently based on the record before it if they found that service connection was warranted on those same facts. It would be very hard to then not find on those same facts with relating to substitution to the veterans claims. So yes, it would essentially undo it, or those would have been granted for the purposes of accrued benefits, and then you can dispute the ratings under substitution. I mean, in particular with depression, a spouse that you live with can give excellent lay evidence as to how the service-connected condition affects them. So we contend, basically, this issue was raised by the record. Obviously, the board acknowledged it. Recently, there was a Federal Circuit case in Sukuk v. McDonald where the Federal Circuit said that VA's amendment to the remand or referral regulation 19.9 conferred a right on the appellant that is complied with. Not in the same way as a remand, but it can't be ignored later. So we would say those claims are still pending. We have a jurisdictional conferring NOD in his 2010 NOD, which gives this court jurisdiction to hear it. And this entire time, the board has ignored its own previous directions. And on the issue of whether Breedlove applies in this case, whether a secretary can waive jurisdiction or waive substitution at the court, we would argue that they can't, because Breedlove was really confined to substitution at this court, because that statute doesn't apply to the court. It only applies to the secretary. If the veteran had died while we were at the court, that would be fine, but he didn't, and VA still has to comply with its regulations below. And just the larger issue of this woman has gotten mixed messages from VA this entire time. It's accrued, it's not accrued, you can submit new evidence, you can't. You know, and it took at least 4 years for them to adjudicate her DIC claim in the first instance.
Are the substitution regs truly jurisdictional?
Are the substitution rights jurisdictional? No, I don't think so. I just think that, in the regulation, VA has to give the appellant the opportunity to waive the right to substitution affirmatively. It has to proceed as a substitution claim unless the surviving family member chooses to waive that affirmatively. There was recently a case regarding that where Judge Kasold said that there may be a reason a person would want accrued benefits versus substitution. And in that case, they didn't give the surviving spouse the opportunity to waive her right to that and proceeded as a substitution. So one of the bigger issues is that these things have been treated as the same ever since 2011, but Congress wouldn't have created a separate statute and not touched the accrued benefit statute if we were meant to have the same, treat these things as the same thing. So we would say those claims from the veterans 2010 NOD remain unadjudicated, but we're in front of the board because the board had acknowledged that this issue exists.
Weren't they taken together? Didn't Ms. Encarnacion seek both accrued benefits and DIC, and that's how they processed it?
Well,
with nobody on either side using the word substitution.
Right. I mean, part of the issue that you had here is that statute was passed in 2008. VA's regulations didn't get written and promulgated until 2014. In the interim, they had a VA fast letter, which apparently came into effect in 2010. So she files in 2011, which is almost immediately when VA is trying to implement this whole new process. So I do believe that was, part of the issue here. But even the FAST letter said that her DIC claim form, that 21534, has to be treated as a claim for substitution unless she waives the right to substitution. So there is no, at that time, there was no separate claim form for substitution versus accrued. But the claim form was supposed to be treated as a claim for substitution unless they affirmatively waived the right to substitution. So it was supposed to proceed along that path with a notice to her that she could waive it if she wanted and do the accrued benefits on her own.
But didn't it proceed on that path, but without the notice?
No. I mean, VA's initial adjudications were on the basis of accrued benefits, with the disclaimer on the rating decision saying made at the time of the veteran's, made on the evidence in the file at the time of the veteran's death, which is accrued benefits, versus substitution where she could submit new evidence. So there was a TDIU determination in 2014, I believe, prior to it ever getting to the board, that was made on the basis of accrued benefits.
So, has this argument or something resembling this argument been raised before? I know you've only been, you kind of came on the case late and didn't have the opportunity to do supplemental briefing, and so you may have seen things prior counsel didn't. But has this been raised in any way, shape, or form in this case so far?
Well, I would say NOVA challenged the board's regulations, and because the board regulations require the board to dismiss and send it back to VA for a determination under 3.1010E. NOVA challenged those at the Federal Circuit. The Secretary affirmatively said, no, the board absolutely cannot make this in the first instance, period, end of story. And that was, you know, found valid by the Federal Circuit. You also have a case recently, I do apologize, the name is not in my brain at the moment, where Judge Casel kind of dealt with an opposite issue where the claimant wanted accrued benefits. VA proceeded with substitution. As a result, they got a new medical exam that was unfavorable, and she appealed to say, this record is supposed to be closed. I told you I wanted new, you know, accrued benefits, not substitution. And he remanded back for the board to consider only the file at the veteran's death. So there are, yeah, I mean, there is case law where this has been challenged, and the issue has been try to have it parsed a little bit, because the language has been used interchangeably at VA in a way that's not helpful.
I want to pick up on Judge Jacobs' question. So the rules governing substitution, are they in regulation? Are they in U.S. code? Are they in a statute?
They are in regulation, because the statute gave the Secretary sole right to create the process.
So if they're in a regulation, they can't be jurisdictional, because...
Right, I mean, they're not jurisdictional.
Yeah, an agency can't sort of give or restrict its own jurisdiction. So the problem, if they're not jurisdictional, is they're waivable. And the fact that this objection is... I mean, this case has been going on for a long time, obviously. It's we're a good ways in. There's been ample time to... object to maybe the path it's taken, but it seems like maybe that's passed. What do you say to that?
Well, I would say, first of all, the notice that the first time the board recognized the issue was 2016. The first time the board remanded for VA to send notice to her was in 2017. So it hasn't actually been that long that she's been... should be aware of this. We'll also say she's a spouse that lives in Puerto Rico. She primarily speaks Spanish. She was also pro se below. So, and I think, you know, that the court, and you can see it in Breedlove too, has kind of wrestled with what is the status of this surviving spouse now that we have these two different statutes. So I wouldn't expect her to understand the difference between the two. And yes, those regulations can be waived because they're jurisdictional, but that doesn't mean that the board doesn't have to comply with its previous remands and its previous orders. I mean, I would urge the court to adopt the same principle that they had in the Federal Circuit recently in that unpublished case, that referral is not just nothing. Referral acknowledges that there's unadjudicated claims that should eventually be complied with. Now, it's true that the board dismissed in 2016 without prejudice and, you know, referred for the issue of substitution, but that dismissal was not jurisdictional because that's in regulation.
You've got 3 minutes.
Does that answer your question, though? I guess if you wanted us to address whether... Cirillo applied in this case, we would say that it just simply doesn't apply because the underlying board decision is not the 2018 board decision. And, you know, as we've, taken the position that those decisions all stem from accrued benefits only, it wouldn't affect the adjudication here at all to reconsider, you know, a 2018 board decision at this point. Also, it's not clear how that's going to proceed because, the letter says that they are docketing it to consider reconsideration. It doesn't say that they will reconsider it. And Ms. Encarnacion is elderly and she has declared bankruptcy during the process of all of these claims she's been pursuing since 2011. that have taken decades for the board to even acknowledge. So, you know, I don't believe that you know, any potential reconsideration of the 2018 decision would have any effect on the court's jurisdiction here. But also, it's possible, and our concern would be that if we appealed a reconsideration of the board from 2018, if they reconsider it, we appeal it here, that the secretary would then be able to argue that that reconsideration was unlawful because it was done while some of the issues were pending before this court. So our concern, you know, just in making sure that the claimant is protected, is that that could open the door to her whole claims being thrown out generally. And it also would take a much longer time for her than getting a remand from this court that would direct VA to issue a decision on substitution and then proceed with the claims with the proper notice.
And how will that affect the NOD issue that's pending, if at all?
I think the NOD issue relates to the accrued claims, so it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter. Because in 2016, when the board, you know, took all of these issues stemming from her single claim form, they separated that out. But then they attempted to retake jurisdiction in a way that they couldn't. They tried to make their own determination, which the regulation says they can't do. It required them to dismiss. They didn't do that for years. And so now we're here. So anything that goes along the path of the board's adjudication since 2016 would relate only to the right to accrued benefits, not the veterans' underlying claims.
Thank you, counsel. We'll speak again on rebuttal. Thanks. As Secretary's counsel.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The central issue here today is jurisdiction. First, the board did not have jurisdiction over appellant's attempted appeal of the 2018 rating decision because that decision merely was implementing the board's 2018 grant. And second, because the board has now construed this notice of disagreement as a motion for reconsideration, the 2018 board decision is not final, and the board still retains jurisdiction over the underlying increased rating for the right knee appeal.
I want to kind of kick the tires on the first statement. Why would the board not have jurisdiction, or why would we not have jurisdiction, or the board not have jurisdiction over the 2018 RO ruling?
So the 2018 rating decision was not a decision that was issued under Section 511A. And because the board's jurisdiction, which stems from Section 7104A, requires the board to issue decisions, issue reviews of decisions that are under Section 511A, the board would not have jurisdiction.
So the term decision would require something of an independent adjudication. It's not a ministerial act of just applying a rating.
That's correct. Under Section 511A, that states that the secretary shall decide all questions of law and fact. However, in June 2018, this rating decision was not deciding any question of law or fact. That decision was issued by the board in May 2018 when the board issued its decision granting a 10% rating for this right knee disability but denying a rating in excess of 10%. So that was the one review that was issued by the board under 7104A, and that was the decision issued under 511A. The regional office in the 2018 decision was merely implementing what the board had decided. It was not making any additional fact-finding in regards to the increased rating for the right knee disability.
So the May 2018 board decision was the appellant's opportunity to appeal
Yes.
Did not?
She did not, although motion for reconsideration with the board notwithstanding, she still could have the opportunity to appeal that decision, as filing a motion for reconsideration within 120 days would toll her time to appeal that decision to this court.
Right. And so absent that, though, the appeal would have long – appeal period would have long run.
Absent that, yes. However, tolling still can apply. This court can consider equitable tolling. But in the specific circumstances of this case – as the board has now sympathetically and liberally construed her pro se pleading to be a motion for reconsideration, she can still either get reconsideration granted by the board, or if the board denies reconsideration, her time to appeal to this court will then begin again. So she can still seek and obtain the relief that she is seeking.
So are you talking about the recent letter from the board that notified?
Yes.
Okay.
So is the secretary conceding then that that the period for appeal of the May 2018 board decision has been tolled?
Yes, the secretary is conceding that the time to appeal that has been tolled, as she filed this notice of disagreement within 120 days of the initial board decision, which was May 2018.
Right. Will that get the appellant what she's seeking?
I cannot speak to the underlying merits issue.
I don't mean the outcome of the merits and everything, but the opportunities to be heard and present new evidence. And
yes, so as the board, because this court has ordered the board not to take any action on this motion for reconsideration yet, once this pending litigation is decided, the board will then determine whether or not it will grant reconsideration. So if the board grants reconsideration, it can vacate that decision and issue a new rating decision, or not rating decision, excuse me, a new board decision.
I mean, the mechanics of it do matter a tiny bit, which is, you know, the board's action, the board can't rule in a case that's currently in front of us. But you can concede. I mean, you represent the secretary, and the case, in a sense, is in your court more than it is the board's. Is that something, I mean, you're prepared to discuss settlement on those terms? Because otherwise we have to issue a decision. I mean,
the secretary would disagree that the current decision that's before the court is the same as the 2018 decision. There would be agree with appellant that Cerullo or Pulak would not be applicable here because that 2018 decision has not yet been appealed to this court. What's before the court right now is a separate issue of this June 2020 board decision that dismissed the appeal for a lack of jurisdiction because the appeal that came before that board was a notice of disagreement with a June 2018 rating decision, which would be a separate issue. So
is that the problem with the appellant's argument here today, is that you guys are talking apples and oranges? She's talking about the May 2018 board decision that may or may not be subject to reconsideration, could be appealed and all that, and you guys are focused on the 2020 decision, and that looking on that and just at that, it raises just an issue of Can you appeal an implementing rating decision?
Yes. The secretary would say the current issue before the court is whether a veteran or an appellant can file a notice of disagreement with the rating decision that merely implemented a board decision. And that is the current issue before this court in regards to whether or not the board would have jurisdiction over such attempted appeal. And the board in the 2020 decision stated, no, we do not have jurisdiction, and it dismissed the appeal, and the secretary argues that that dismissal is proper and must be affirmed. The 2018 decision, however, we recognize that is ultimately what this appellant is trying to appeal. She's trying to get a higher rating for the right knee disability. But the way Congress has set out how veterans and appellants should go about attempting to appeal is for the appellant to file a notice of appeal with this court within 120 days or file a motion for reconsideration with the board. And prior to the board determining that this notice of disagreement was a motion for reconsideration, neither of those things had explicitly happened. However, now that the board, given the court's order for the board to determine, for the secretary to determine whether or not these types of notices of disagreement should be sympathetically and liberally read and construed as motions for reconsideration, once that issue was brought before the secretary and brought to the board determined that, yes, this does meet the requirements under the regulation as a motion for reconsideration. So
we don't need to address this substitution discussion that we've been talking about?
So the secretary would argue that because this court must take into account prejudicial error, remanding for a substitution determination would serve no purpose, and there has also been no harm to appellant. Prior to substitution becoming a statute, these types of accrued benefits were adjudicated under 5121, which was the accrued benefit statute. And in 2008, Congress created the substitution statute. And this court has explained that these are two different procedural paths to the same outcome, which is obtaining accrued benefits. So while there was not a formal decision by the regional office that explicitly granted substitution, there is no harm to appellant in this particular case because she was provided with notice and the opportunity to submit evidence in 2017. So she was provided with those rights as a substitute. And further, because the actual issue currently before this court is whether or not the July 2018 notice of disagreement form was a proper notice of disagreement, and whether or not she could appeal that June 2018 rating decision, since the answer is no, she cannot appeal that, the board wouldn't have jurisdiction whether this was adjudicated under 5121 or 5121A. So to remand for the board to send it to the regional office to issue this formal substitution determination would then our regional office would issue that grant substitution because the secretary does concede she is eligible for substitution. She is the surviving spouse and eligible for substitution. Once the regional office does that, it will go back to the board, and the board will again have to dismiss the appeal because the appeal that was before the board stemmed from June 2018 rating decision, which was an attempted appeal in July 2018. So remanding would serve no purpose. It would still ultimately be a dismissal because the board did not have jurisdiction over this notice of disagreement.
Don't we have to apply the same sympathetic construction principle to the confusing sequence of events that Ms. Encarnacion was presented with in 2018 in determining whether she complied with the instructions as best she could or whether she received meaningful notice of what she was supposed to do?
While there is this duty to, you know, liberally and sympathetically construe pleadings, and while the secretary does acknowledge that unfortunately VA's procedures were not properly followed in this case, that would not serve to confer jurisdiction when jurisdiction does not exist.
I mean, I don't want to sort of reduce this to like an administrative or civil procedure discussion, but the difference between a jurisdictional rule and a claims processing rule is the latter is waivable, right? I mean, there may be a million reasons why a non-compliant NOD the VA can dismiss, right? And they have the authority to dismiss it. But that's not jurisdiction. Like, jurisdiction means they literally cannot touch it. That includes even interpreting it as a motion for reconsideration. So jurisdiction is an absolute bar. Like, if you can't hear it because it's jurisdictional, you can't just sort of recharacterize it, call it a motion for reconsideration, and then hear it. because that's what jurisdiction means. It means you lack the legal capacity to hear something, whereas a claims processing rule, the VA can waive, right? They can say, okay, normally we would have the authority to dismiss this, but now, you know, we can waive the claims processing rule and we can go ahead and hear it. And this is a huge, from our end, you know, writing a decision, this is a huge distinction, because to say that an NOD letter is jurisdictional, filing an NOD correctly is jurisdictional, that would mean anybody who fills one out incorrectly automatically cannot have their, like, their appeal dies that minute that they send off the non-compliant NOD. You're following what I'm saying?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. And I say the Secretary agrees in part but disagrees in part.
Get to the latter.
All right. Interested. So we disagree that the board would be unable to look at this document and determine, can we liberally and sympathetically read this to be a motion for reconsideration? So that we disagree that the board would not have jurisdiction
but how?
To do that.
How? Jurisdiction is jurisdiction is the basis of law. Like if Judge Jaquith's former office, the U.S. Attorney's Office, tried to file an indictment in our court, that's lack of jurisdiction. There's nothing we can do with that. There's no authority ever. There's no set of circumstances under which we can hear that. Whereas a non-compliant NOA is something that we can waive under certain circumstances. That's not jurisdictional in a meaningful sense. That's just a rule that you can invoke to dismiss a case that you can also waive.
Yes, Your Honor. And the Secretary asserts here that this is a true jurisdictional issue and not a claims processing issue. The issue of whether a appellant can file a notice of disagreement with a rating decision is a true jurisdictional bar and not a claims processing issue. This is not like in Percy where a veteran filed an untimely VA Form 9, which this court held was claims processing, and that VA can waive that timeliness of the Form 9, or more recently in Hall, where the veteran filed a notice of disagreement but on the wrong form, and this court held that this was a claims processing issue. Here, a document purporting to be a notice of disagreement was filed with a rating decision, and that rating decision was not a decision under Section 511A.
I understand that. I understand that if your position is that nobody ever has the authority to appeal this type of instrument, I mean, that's fine. That's to me, is a non-controversial proposition. But again, it doesn't make whatever they are trying to do jurisdictional. It just means VA is willing to maybe recharacterize it as a challenge to the earlier board decision. And then, you know, they can, if it fits the recon criteria, they can hear it. Does that make sense?
Yes, there is a separate, there are two separate issues at here. A pro se veteran or claimant can file mistakenly a motion for reconsideration on a specific form, hypothetically a VA Form 9. But if this is in writing, it expresses disagreement with the board's decision, and it gets to the board and it's routed before the board could then determine this is a motion for reconsideration with our decision that we issued. But the issue here is whether or not a rating decision that merely implemented what the board did can be appealed by filing a notice of disagreement. And since that rating decision was not a decision under 511A, and because the board's jurisdiction stems from 511A under 7104A, the board itself would not have any jurisdiction to consider a appeal stemming from the rating decision implementing this decision, because that would give the...
Sure. I mean, there's nothing to review. Right?
Yes.
I mean, they're just reviewing what they did earlier. Yeah.
That's correct. And this also...
Even though it was VA that invited the appellant to submit the NOD.
In this particular case, the rating decision was also implementing the board's grant of service connection for depression. So regarding depression, there were appealable issues because the initial rating assigned for depression and the effective date for depression were questions of law and fact that were decided in the first instance. So the appellate rights that were given to appellant in this case would have applied to those depression issues. However, even with the confusion, that does not serve to grant jurisdiction for the board to then have a second review of this when no jurisdiction existed in the first place. And this court in Hall most recently explained that jurisdictional rules are drastic, and no matter when they are discovered, if it's truly a jurisdictional issue, the case must be dismissed because any action would be illegal. So in the 2020 decision that's currently on appeal to this court, the board did dismiss the appeal for a lack of jurisdiction, and that was the only option it could do because it did not have jurisdiction to hear that particular appeal.
Didn't it earlier accept it?
Excuse me?
Didn't the board earlier accept it?
It did, mistakenly. That was vacated in 2020 joint motion for remand, in which the parties instructed the board to address whether it had jurisdiction. But the question of whether an NOD is valid is a legal question subject to de novo review by this court. So regardless that the board in 2019 might have accepted it, that, again, doesn't serve to waive jurisdiction when this isn't something that can be waived.
So the burden of, for all those mistakes by VA falls on the appellant.
I would disagree that it would fall on appellant because he or she still does have the ability to seek review by this court because the 2018 decision can now still be appealed to this court, and she still has the ability to get the relief she is seeking. But the secretary does unfortunately recognize that there were many mistakes that were made both by the regional office and by the board in this case, and does apologize for that, but it does not serve to grant jurisdiction when jurisdiction does not exist.
What's the timeline to file recon with the board?
To file reconsideration with the board, you can file a motion for reconsideration at any time, but to ensure you can appeal to the court for that time to be told, that should be filed within 120 days. And in this case, this was filed within 120 days, the notice of disagreement that the board is now construing as a motion for reconsideration. So her time to file to this court has been told. And then to the extent that this court is asked about whether the duty to sympathetically read and construe pro se pleadings would apply to these types of notices of disagreement to be construed as motions for reconsideration, the board does regularly, when it does see these notices of disagreement filed, does generally construe them as motions for reconsideration already because of the duty to liberally and sympathetically read pro se claimants' pleadings. However, the secretary would stop short of saying that this court should require the board to always, for every single notice of disagreement, construe it as a motion for reconsideration because this is a very fact-dependent, case-specific inquiry that requires the board to look at it in the first instance to determine whether this particular pleading could meet the requirements of a motion for reconsideration.
Does or did VA have a policy to do that in these kinds of cases, construe a mistake in NOD as a request for reconsideration?
The board generally says that there's no written policy, but the board generally does when this is brought to the board's attention.
It's in the M21, right?
The M21, no, because this is a board.
But there's an M21 provision that talks in terms of the veterans submitting it and the claims processors sending it to the board for them to determine whether or not they think it's an MFR.
Yes, there is a M21 provision under M21-5, I believe it's 7G2, and that is specific to if the regional office finds something like this, what the regional office is supposed to do. And unfortunately, this doesn't look like it was followed properly in this case. It did provide appellant notice that it could not accept a notice of disagreement, but confusingly, it still issued a statement of the case, which...
But your position is we don't need to get into the MFR at all.
Correct.
right? So I'm going to channel this judge on our court, Judge Allen. He's oftentimes asks, you know, assume one of us is going to have to write an opinion. What is it that this opinion should say?
Yes, so the court should hold that a claimant cannot file a notice of disagreement with a rating decision that merely implements a board decision, and that if a claimant does, that the board would not have jurisdiction over it and the board should dismiss it. Further, the court should hold that if a notice of disagreement form is filed, the board should determine whether the duty to sympathetically and liberally read and construe pro se pleadings would require it to interpret this particular motion for notice of disagreement as a motion for reconsideration. And finally, the court should hold that the issue of substitution does not warrant remand because, taking into account prejudicial error, there is no prejudice to appellant at this time because remand would serve no purpose for this particular case because the board would again have to dismiss the appeal for a lack of jurisdiction. And if there's nothing further.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First, with respect to what Apelli had mentioned about whether there is whether the board would be able to consider the substitution issue within the context of the 2010 or 2020 decision, in Bernard, this court said that the board is authorized to decide all questions presented on the record before it that were necessary to the decision in the matter. This had to do with whether an NOD was valid. The NOD couldn't be jurisdiction conferring because it related to the same 10% knee rating. So that's true. However, the board accepted the case and ruled on the merits. Then it was appealed to this court. It came back again. The record before the board revealed the substitution issue that the board acknowledged in 2016. And I, again, I do understand this is rather nitpicky in a circumstance where you know she is the surviving spouse. But in 2011, when she filed, VA's rules said she had to be construed as a substitute for the veteran's claims. VA proceeded to, adjudicate a DIC claim and denied accrued benefits in 2012. She appealed it. She didn't get another decision until 2014. She didn't reach the board until 2016. In the meantime, she's, declared bankruptcy due to two hurricanes in Puerto Rico. But she also was in dire financial straits because her husband had passed. And it took years for the board to even acknowledge that she hadn't gotten notice. She wasn't given notice until 2017. When she was given notice, she was given 30 days to submit additional evidence. She is a Spanish-speaking spouse who I can't understand how she could be expected to understand what her rights are when they're being when she's being told one thing and then she's being told another.
I mean, one need only sort of glance quickly at the record here to recognize this is kind of the poster child for just a really bad procedural case. But again, how does that? I'm struggling to see the remedy in the sense that we can help you with this.
I mean, I don't believe that there isn't a harm in going back and offering her the rights that she should have had in 2011 and giving her time to understand what they are before making a decision again, in particular because the veteran did ask for a hearing in conjunction with that 2010 Form 9. He checked the box. 2011 Form 9. He checked the box that he didn't want a hearing, but then asked for one in the section below it. And that hearing was never offered to her. So, I don't think, just like in Bailey, I don't think the harm here is quantifiable because there have been decisions made, and it's unclear whether those decisions were based on the record at death, whether they, whether she knew she had any rights, because that wasn't 2017 and 2011. Is a pretty long period of time. So I don't, I can't, if I put myself in her shoes, I can't understand how she could understand what was happening with her claims. I think the same is true when you're talking about whether this NOD is valid or not. I would say that the board could still have jurisdiction based on the original NOD, jurisdiction conferring NOD, related to either her NOD for accrued benefits in 2012 or the veteran's NOD in 2010, whether you want to talk about his claims or her claims.
So, I mean, I know you weren't counsel on the case at the time, but I'm struggling. What was the logic behind the 2020 JMR?
That I don't have an answer to, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that issue. But in this case, VA sent a letter that was compliant with Section 511 because it adjudicated depression, service connection for depression, service connection for left knee. It applied its own facts. The left knee, I'm sorry, was from the board. But depression was an issue decided in the first instance. They did this all in the same decision, sent her appellate rights that she could file an NOD. She files an NOD. That was within 120 days, but well within 120 days. And then they took months before they issued a deferred rating decision saying this isn't valid. And then it was way after 120 days, they informed her in a letter on September 20th that she could appeal it to the court or to the board, file a motion for reconsideration, though she was already precluded from doing that. They also notified her on September 21st with an SOC that adjudicated the claim. And then the board adjudicated the claim. I mean, if you have a jurisdictional conferring NOD for the issue of a right knee, the fact that VA proceeded to adjudicate this as if her disagreement with that rating is valid, that should be a claims processing rule, not a jurisdictional rule. The board should have been able to make that decision on the basis of the facts of the case, whether or not, you know, it agreed that this was proper. But they couldn't just dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. The facts of this case are so lopsided against a widow who, I mean, if they're including them all in the same decision, an issue that they're deciding in the first instance and an issue that they're implementing from the board, there's nothing in the letter that indicates this issue you can't appeal, this issue you can. I mean, arguably you could say it says it from the reasons and bases in the rating decision, but the expectation, I mean, we all have been doing this for a while, so we understand how these things work. And I don't think that it's fair if you step back in a person who doesn't understand how any of this works, it would be really unfair to expect them to understand they couldn't file that NOD. Because I'm not sure how she could have known that. And then it was compounded by the fact that VA didn't respond to that for months, and then she couldn't appeal at that point. So they could have remedied this when they got the NOD and sent her a letter and said, you can't appeal the right knee, you can appeal the depression. If you want to appeal the right knee, you have to go to the board, you have to go to the court. And I don't think a letter that she got with the board decision really cures that in any way. That's understandable to, you know, an elderly veteran, particularly a person who's not English speaking in the first instance. It's just not, it's also not accurate that that's not a rating decision under 511. It is. It is because it adjudicated the depression. And it's VA's mistake to have combined those two things together.
Like I asked government's counsel, assuming one of us is going to have to write an opinion, what should it say?
I would say that I would urge this court to hold that that the issue of accrued benefits and substitution are separate, and that, you know, if the issue is still before the board, that remains unadjudicated. it has to be dealt with by the board because it's in the record before the board. If the court wants to reach the decision of whether the NOD is valid from 2018, I think that you could hold that the jurisdictional conferring NOD related to the issue as it was originally filed, and anything after, if VA chooses to adjudicate it incorrectly, that doesn't fall on the veteran, and that doesn't mean, or the claimant, and that doesn't mean that the board doesn't have jurisdiction.
In its simplest form, I suppose you'd be happy if we just said she wasn't properly substituted, remanded to the board for referral of that question, and rule from the bench today.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that's actually really important because there is no case law on this. There's a lot of case law relating to how 5121A impacts the court's ability to substitute. But she cannot be the only claimant that has been accrued, substitute. We don't know. We're going to keep putting on our decisions that this is all based on evidence when he died and nothing that you submitted. I think it needs to be clarified for VA. Because as recently as 2018, they were putting that on a decision that was purportedly for the veterans' claims, which is an accrued benefits restriction. So, if there's nothing further.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. This will be taken under advisement. Thank you.